Blog Talk Radio. Hello to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Jackie Laura Jones here with you again on True Forgiveness Teachings for this August, 15th, 2017. Oh, I can't believe how quickly the year is moving, and I have one of my favorite people here again today, Bruce Rawls, who joins us on the first and third Tuesday of every month. Bruce, welcome.
Thank you, Jackie. Always a joy to be on the show.
Oh, it's so great to have you. I wanted to just do a couple of announcements really quick. And for those of you just tuning in, if you're not familiar with Bruce Rawls, his site, acimblog.com, is just the greatest wealth of information for course students and teachers. So I encourage you to check that out. And speaking of sites, I wanted to announce to everyone, I have put all my media and everything I'm doing under one umbrella. And my new site is Jackie.news. That's the website, Jackie.news. And you can always reach me at Jackie@Jackie.news. And for those of you that have my 24-hour emails, there's a lot of you out there. Those of you that have the True Forgiveness emails, those will redirect. So no worries about that. But eventually, you can just know that you can go to Jackie.news and everything is there. So just wanted to make that announcement. And one other thing, too, before we get started, my sister, Cindy Laura Renard, and I are very excited for our workshop, A Course in Miracles workshop, coming up in Toledo, Ohio, our hometown, on Saturday, September 16th from 2 to 6. And I have the link for you up on Jackie.news under workshops. It's so affordable. I think it's $20 pre-register, $25 at the door. We want everybody to be able to attend. And if you're in the Ohio area or even Indiana or Michigan, we'd love to have you join us. We have a few people coming from Virginia, so we're very excited. So again, you can go to Jackie.news and click workshops, and the registration link is there. So Bruce, hey, it's so good to have you back again. How's everything been going with you?
Good. And you, the usual busy. And I'm just looking at your new website. Looks great. Looks really nice. And since you mentioned go ahead.
I said, look at you. You're right on it. Click on it.
Well, anyway, you mentioned going to Toledo, and I always think of that John Denver song about being nowhere at all. And I think, well, that fits beautifully with what we thought we'd talk about today.
Exactly. And you know what, Bruce? My parents took us to see John Denver in Toledo at what was called Centennial Hall back then. And people were cracking up. We're like, yep, that's us. We're proud. We're from Toledo. We're proud. So funny.
I just thought that was a great, funny song. Yeah.
It really was.
They roll back the sidewalks precisely at 10, and people who live there are not seen again, or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. It's so funny. Yeah. I'm so proud that you even know that song, Bruce. You know everything. It's so funny. Oh, my God.
Well, no, I just haven't remembered that song anyway, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Well, can you hear me okay, Bruce? I'm having a little trouble with my volume hearing you, but you can hear me okay?
Yeah. I can hear you just fine. Yeah, we're not used to the phone, which was sort of a last minute backup because the internet connection didn't work for me today. But so the audio is probably not quite as clear as it usually is. But hopefully you can hear okay.
Right. For all you listeners out there, Mercury is in retrograde. So Bruce called in a couple minutes before the show, and he said, "You know what? I couldn't get on with the link. I send the co-host the link." before the show to connect. So he's calling in on the phone, you know, bless his heart, which works too, but we'll have to check on that. But Mercury is retrograde, and Mark and I have been noticing some computer issues, Bruce, so maybe something has to do with that. We don't know. But your comment about Toledo's...
It's all part of our forgiveness classroom, right?
Oh, my heavens. We are never deprived of forgiveness opportunities, are we? So your point was great about Toledo and what we're going to discuss today. We were going to go over, my friends, some of the course fundamentals, and we thought that we would start with lesson one in the workbook, which hits on the basic tenet of the course's teaching that the world we see is an illusion. We made it. God did not make it. So that would mean an illusion is an illusion is an illusion. And the specialness rant I just went on about Toledo is also an illusion.
Exactly. But that's kind of fun, so, to take in stride, too, and just recognize that it's all part of, you know, that forgiveness curriculum, the classroom that we all have, to just look at the craziness that is in our mind that we call the ego thought system, and learn to more and more gently forgive ourselves for having made that up, and then essentially disentangle ourselves from the insanity that thought system implies, right?
Very well said. Yes, disentangle ourselves. And boy, that feels like it sometimes. We are just like tangled up in this web of an illusion. And what goes into the first lesson that's so important that we're going to go over with you guys today is we do tend to make certain things much more meaningful than others. And what Jesus is asking us to learn is to generalize everything. Now, this comes with practice, of course. But what he wants us to do is recognize in these first lessons how much we don't generalize. Rather, we want to keep our hierarchies of illusions in place. And our awareness of this is the first step, or a big step, isn't it, Bruce?
It really is. And I think to preface conversation about the first workbook lessons and the early workbook lessons, just as the first 50 miracle principles that are in the text of A Course in Miracles, it's I think worth remembering and pointing out that there, it's really a holographic thought system and a holographic curriculum that we're learning, or really unlearning, I suppose, and that right. Every part is equally important and interconnected to every other part. In fact, every part contains the whole, and the whole contains every part. And that's this fractal holographic nature of the truth of really perfect oneness that just seems to have different parts. So when you read those early workbook lessons, starting with number one in this case, the whole course really is in that one lesson, and if you will. And so it's I think, and Ken Wapnick points that out, is that you know, there's really a lot in there. It's not like it starts out with simple stuff, although they're all simple. But the profound nature of the whole thought system is contained in every lesson, but the first one is no exception. In fact, this first one really is packs the whole potency of the whole course, doesn't it?
Gosh, well said. It sure does. And it's so interesting how we're so invested in the ego thought system, the thought system of separation, when we mm-hmm. recognize that the world is projected from that thought of separation in the mind. The body's projected right along with that. The world has never left its source in the mind. So it kicks off. Right, like you just said, Bruce, nothing I see in this room, on this street, from this window, in this place, means anything. So
right.
We could sit there, and if we don't understand the metaphysics, we say, well, how can that possibly be? Of course it does. But again, we're getting into the idea that an illusion is an illusion is an illusion. So Jesus is trying to have us not differentiate between objects. I mean, people, bacteria, atoms, molecules, you know, everything and anything, right?
Exactly. And again, this is not the course that we're talking about, A Course in Miracles, which is a spiritual, psychological thought system of pure non-duality, is never about the form or behavior. It's always about the mind. So seeing that nothing means anything, it's really basically giving us the introductory idea that the ego's interpretation of everything doesn't mean anything. Out of the context of inclusion, nothing seemingly separate means anything. But that's not that. You know, we have to work up to that in the sense we have to by undoing that belief, and we do that, I think, by seeing shared interests. And I think it's easy, especially with workbook lessons like this that sound kind of like nihilism. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that word right. I actually had to look it up because it's not a word I use a lot, but I think it's an interesting word. It's nihilism. And the dictionary definition is the rejection of all religious and moral principles, often in the belief that life is meaningless. Well, and then the synonyms are skepticism, negativity, cynicism, and pessimism. But again, that's the ego's view of the world, is that everything is meaningless. But seen from the perspective of the only thing that's important is what's in it for me, and life's awful and then you die kind of thing. The family version of that phrase. but that's kind of the idea of the ego, isn't it? But once you turn it around and see that the relationship we have with everyone is really where the beauty and the fun and the kindness exist, then it's the relationship we have with everyone and everything that goes beyond specialness, that goes into total inclusion, which is where the generalization we've been talking about starts applying. That's when it becomes truly meaningful, because the meaning really is in the whole and not in the separate parts. And I think that's what this workbook lesson is trying to get us to see. But would you like to shall we read some of Ken's commentary and the journey through the workbook? Because there's some great stuff there.
There sure is. Go ahead. Start us off.
Okay. On page 15 in the Journey Through the Workbook of A Course in Miracles by Ken Wapnick, I'm going to skip over the first couple of paragraphs and go to the middle of the left column and where he says, "This very first lesson, which seems so simple, if not simple-minded, if you do not really understand it, contains the complete thought system of A Course in Miracles. There is no difference among any of the things in this world." And again, this obviously not just not talking about the level of form, but it's talking about on the level of the truth of what we are that's beyond space and time. From that perspective, this starts to make sense, right? But not from our everyday thinking of, well, this pen and the other pens and the little cup that holds all the pens is no different from the other pens. Well, I can see that they have different colors and shapes and sizes and probably different colors of ink and, you know, all those kind of things that we've taught ourselves. But that doesn't mean that the essence of what we all are isn't the same on a level that we're not used to thinking from. So I think that's where we need to kind of step back and remember where this is being pitched at and to, right?
Very good, yeah.
So I'll go on. He says, there is no difference among any of the things in this world. They are all equally the same because they are all part of the illusion reflecting the same thought system of separation, which itself is unreal. And then he goes on to say, as you know from your study of the text, the first law of chaos, the foundation of the thought system of the ego in the world, is that there is a hierarchy of illusions. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like to always think about George Orwell's in Animal Farm, where he says, you know, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of what the ego does. It basically says, well, sure, yeah, it's the same. But then we start, you know, having preferences that are more than just things that we're willing to not be upset about. Once we start getting upset about differences and allow that to affect our peace, that's when we know we've stepped over the line back into ego's turf and have made big deals out of what in truth is nothing and nothing that means anything in truth. And I think the challenge of this course is that it takes a long time to practice that and to be at peace with whatever happens or doesn't happen, and learn to forgive ourselves for wanting to make big deals and wanting to judge and condemn the things that we think are besetting us in the world and impositions on our peace of mind and whatnot. So.
Yes, well said. I mean, Jesus is clearly a wonderful example of being gentle with us here and gives us his course in the ego framework where it is needed,
right.
Meaning he knows we believe we're bodies and that is where we start. But integrating this gentle kindness into our own lives is one of the biggest lessons and one of the biggest benefits we could ever wish to learn, because there's no freedom in the dream. Like, we think we make choices in the dream. So like you said, Bruce, earlier, when we're talking about this, we can only be talking about it and having it make sense when we're thinking of it in terms of mind. And everything is about the mind and not behavior. So when we question every value we hold, it's not that we're giving up things physically, but rather it will eventually be our choice to give up mentally the meaning that we as egos have assigned to the world, our relationships and the things in the world. And that's what these first lessons are getting at, the meaning we've assigned to everything, which there's always a hierarchy, right? People are more important than pens and lamps and everything, right?
And even some pens are more important than other pens, you know? And
that's right.
At this little cup with multiple pens in it, you know? It's like, well I like this one better than that one.
Exactly.
I mean, we can laugh at that, but yet we all do that, you know, quite frequently and make big deals out of those differences. And then forget about the fact that if we get upset by those, we're actually inflicting a punishment on ourselves that really isn't necessary. You know, we're actually, you know, making our lives more miserable than they need to be. And I think that's what this course is helping us to do, is to look at how miserable we've made ourselves, and not trying to make us more miserable, but just to help us notice how you know, unhappy we have been with our approach to things as egos. And realize, you know, there is a better way, you know, we all have that capability of finding it, and we find it by looking at the, like you said earlier, Jackie, the value that we've invested in things, and looking at that valuation process, and watching our mind, and seeing when we're starting to make something more important or more, you know, lesser or greater importance or value than other things, and realizing that is really at the heart of so much misery in the world that is not necessary, you know.
So. Oh, it sure is. Well said. You want to continue on with your part there?
Sure. So Ken continues in his commentary about lesson one here. He says, if I believe that my body or hand is more important than a lamp, I'm clearly saying that there's a hierarchy of illusions. Again, it would be hard, if possible at all, to find someone in this world who does not share the belief in that hierarchy, or who even thinks about that as an issue. Thus, if you give some serious thought to this, it will become clear to you that your whole life is based upon a lie. And even modern physics suggests that there's only one thing, but that we appear to have fragmented it into these perceptual holograms that appear to be different things, you know. Anyways, it's
right.
The first law of chaos that says that there's a hierarchy of illusions. And but I think that's such a great preface to this lesson, that it doesn't make any allowance for differences in the kinds of things which are applied, and that indiscriminateness is really the suggestion that we kind of look at things in our lives with a certain objectivity that allows us to see that, on a kind of a horizontal level, everything really in this space-time realm is the same. But that's certainly not, doesn't mean that we live our lives on a practical level that way. But if we can train our minds to see the sameness, that it also has tremendous practical benefit for us in terms of our frame of mind on a day-to-day basis, because we begin to see that we're all in the same boat. We're all, you know, as some philosopher once said, we're all fighting the same hard battle, and we need to, and we can afford to be kind to ourselves and each other. And that sameness, which is the result of generalizing and seeing all illusions as the same, really is one of the wonderful outcomes of that practice.
Absolutely. And it's so important. We say a lot on this podcast. I know you and I talk about it a lot, that we don't have to feel guilty. We can stop with guilt when we start thinking that we have done something wrong. Or for, I get a lot of emails from people who think they're not doing the course right. They don't know if they're feeling the right benefits. And this is a good place to address that right at lesson one, when Jesus is telling us we don't even need to believe in the exercises at first. He's just asking them to do, asking us to do them, right? And it's so interesting that when we start feeling guilty if we're not doing it right, or we're like, well, this doesn't make sense, I can't do it, it's too hard, I believe things are real. All we merely need to do, for those of us that feel drawn to this path, is entertain the idea that we may be wrong about why our body's eyes are showing us what they are, not to mention they're showing us something at all that the course is saying is not there.
Uh-huh.
But as we progress with the course, our mind is becoming healed of our false thinking, of the unconscious guilt. We end up being happy to know this. It's a relief that we're wrong and that we can actually change our mind about things. And again, it's unsettling at first, guys, for a little bit, of course, and that's understandable. But when we let Jesus or the Holy Spirit work with us, he knows that we're afraid. Again, he's being gentle and leading us. And Bruce, you know something that's really helped me over the years? Keeping it light is I really have thought of it as like a game. Like you're kind of playing a game and you're going along with the lessons, and there's no pressure. You're just asking, you're just applying them as they're asked to be applied. And I would just keep it really light, you know, and smile. This is many, many moons ago. And I thought, you know, that's so helpful. It was so helpful. Doesn't the ego sneak in the back door when we judge the lessons, when we judge how we're doing the lessons, when we feel like it should go faster, we don't get it, or we're not seeing immediate results? You can go on and on, right?
Yeah. That's a really good point. Is when you mention the word results, I think we're so conditioned to thinking in terms of the results are supposed to be something
right.
that changes in our physical circumstances. And because this is always and only about the mind, it really doesn't apply necessarily to physical circumstances. It can as a byproduct,
reflect it can.
There, but it doesn't always. So I think that's an easy trap to get into, thinking that, well, you know, I should have this, you know, perfect life in terms of as the world would define it,
right?
You know, with all the trappings of things that are essentially impossible to try to orchestrate. Think about it, huh? But
right.
the ideal is really to have a perfect awareness and a perfect perspective on things that brings to our memory the perfection that we never left, the self and the identity that is independent of circumstances, and that is a perfection worthy of the mental discipline required to practice the course, because that perfection is something that can't be taken from us. And really, since you mentioned, you know, the resistance that we have, the only thing that's really being asked of us is to take away our investment in misery, and we are reluctant to that because. We're so addicted to our victimhood and our problems and our woes and tales of woe, right. as we've defined them, that we don't even realize that we're hanging on to something that, as Ken Wapnick says, is, you know, the maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem. It's really a self abusive thought system that we're asking ourselves, do I really want this? And yeah.
Yes, well said. I mean, who would we be without our problems and without things to complain about, right? We're like, who would we be? And your point about perfect things here is interesting, because you know what? The Course is not anything about perfect behavior. The Course talks about forgiveness. We can have perfect forgiveness, which means we always remember to forgive when forgiveness is called for, but it's never about perfect behavior, because we have to remember, my friends, we're not really here, although we're having a dream that we're here. So we don't want to leave the metaphysics too far behind here, as I always say, but we are for sure having a dream that we're here. And when we side with the ego, we do believe we are here. We're immersed in the dream. And so A Course in Miracles is a thought system that can help us awaken from our dream. And so it's dislodging our identification with all the things that we've made meaningful in the world, a carrot and a stick. You know, we're always chasing things. And then once we get one thing, we're satisfied for a little bit, but then we want something else. Or what if we got the thing we wanted and then it wasn't what we thought we wanted, and then we're upset because we tried so hard, and then la 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 la. You know, we can all fill in the blanks of things that have happened to us when you get something in the world and it's still not satisfying, right?
Exactly. The example that comes to mind is the stereotypical Christmas toy that is abandoned after 5 minutes, and then the rest of the day is spent playing with the box that it came in. You know,
exactly. That the box all of a sudden becomes more interesting, and then lo and behold, nighttime falls, and nothing else is in. Something else takes the child's interest. You know.
Right, right. Because our egos are fickle. I mean, on the level of the honesty that the ego doesn't have. We would have to admit that all the things that we have apparently achieved, which are usually fairly fleeting, by the ego standards of success, are never really that fulfilling, because, like you say, that the instant that one thing is achieved on the bucket list, there's always, okay, well, now all everything else now comes to the top of the list. So, there's never any real peace in that. But I like how you phrased it as a game, because, if you play a video game and you crash and burn, you hit the reset button and start over again. And I think that's kind of a nice reminder that nothing real harm has been done. You know, no animals were harmed in the making of this movie. You know, and like
the
credits often roll. And so right. The critters that we think we are, we have not been damaged, even if it takes multiple lives to get this stuff. But obviously, it's not the idea to try to do that. But even the things that we think are tragic really are just misperceptions, and we can learn to reevaluate those things.
Oh yes, always well said. Very good. So, do we want to continue on just a little bit here?
Sure. Should we read some more of Ken's commentary on the same page?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. So my friends listening, as Jesus is asking us to do this lesson, he's asking us to look around the room very slowly, and anything we land our gaze on, for example, this table does not mean anything, this chair does not mean anything, this hand does not mean anything, this foot does not mean anything. So Jesus says in the Course, in paragraph 3, notice that these statements are not arranged in any order and make no allowance for differences in the kinds of things to which they are applied. That is the purpose of this exercise. And then Ken goes on to say, this is not to say that you should give up your investment in your body or in your hand. Rather, the purpose of these reflections is to help you become aware, is to help you become aware of how, even on this very basic level, you are reflecting the ego's thought system. These lessons are humbling if you think deeply about them, because they help you realize how much your life goes against everything that A Course in Miracles is teaching. This means, yeah, I know. I mean,
what can
Bruce,
we do, what
like
can we
you
do
said,
but laugh about that, right?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Like you said earlier, the whole course's thought system is contained in lesson one. And it can be unsettling at first when you're trying to generalize. He says, there is a part of you that does not want to learn this course, because there's a part of you that does not want to give up your life, right? He says, Ken says, you do not want to walk around actually believing your hand is as meaningless as a pen, because you believe that there's a body that's real and that you are truly here in the world. If you believe this, as we all do, you cannot believe in the reality of God. So I don't think you can be any more clear than that, or more frustrating, right, when you're beginning the course.
Sure, sure.
But again, I think important to – I'm sorry, Bruce, I just interrupted you. I was just going to say, I think it's important to recognize that we don't have to feel threatened that – we're giving up our life right here. Really, we're giving up how we're looking at our life. And so this is inspiring, because instead of being fearful and reflecting fear, sin, guilt, we can be loving, reflect love. Like you said earlier, Bruce, our shared interests, compassion for people. So even though eventually the course is saying this will be our choice, that we will choose spirit over the body, we're not choosing this in lesson one and feeling like we're giving something up physically. We're really learning to give up how we look at it, right?
Exactly, exactly. Well stated. Yeah. And it's really, and Ken concludes in that paragraph, is we're undoing the way that we perceive and the way we think. And that really does set the tone for what follows, because that really gives us an idea that, well, maybe, just maybe, we could start looking at things not from the perspective of what is this, doing for me or to me, but how can this be a symbol of something that's coming from my mind that can lead me back to a more mindful state where I realize that everything that I perceive is really a part of the capital S self that we all share. But we have, through convention and through enculturation and self-indoctrination, really, adopted this worldview that says that the differences are important and worth, fighting and killing and dying for, and all kinds of crazy things like that. And maybe not on a, maybe the subtleties are used to kind of cover that over a bit, but in essence, whenever we say to ourselves that my peace is compromised if things in the world don't go a certain way and follow a certain set of prescribed outcomes, or if the behavior of some of the characters in my movie act in a way that I think is not right, and I'm not going to be at peace if that happens. We're basically saying to ourselves, I've set myself up for, putting it mildly, disappointment or or really some kind of frustration that really doesn't need to be. And I think it doesn't mean that we don't change what we do in the world. It has nothing to do with changing the behavior, but changing the motivation for the behavior is hugely important. And
hugely.
Right in line with what the course suggests about generalizing, because we're wanting to start to notice how all those choices in the mind really boil down to the same choice. And it's really a choice between thinking in terms of how can I see this as a way to get back to the inclusive oneness we all share, or how can I use it to further the divisive thinking of the ego, which always is trying to make it it's something at someone else's expense, and ultimately the only expense is that's compromised as our own.
Yes.
because there is nobody out there. It really is. We're all the same being, but we just have, you know, convinced ourselves otherwise.
That we're splintered out, yes, and fragmented into separate beings. My friends, mm-hmm. listening, there's no one out there. there's one mind that thinks it's here, and you're it, right? We're it. The one mind that thinks it's here. And I say a lot on this podcast, you'll never be the same once you learn how to truly forgive, when you're looking at your life with Jesus or the Holy Spirit as your teacher. The body's eyes still see form, but your perception, your interpretation of that form changes. And as the unconscious guilt is being healed in your mind, as the thought of separation is being healed, you will feel so peaceful. I know this doesn't come overnight, but boy, the benefits of practicing a thought system like this, when the Holy Spirit or Jesus says, give your problems to me, put them on the altar, let me have you perceive them properly. Guys, we're never the same once we truly want to look with true vision, Christ's vision, who we all really are together, oneness. It's so inspiring sometimes when I think of it. Again, I don't mean that this happens overnight and all of a sudden you do a few lessons, you know, and you're healed. But believe me, I would just recommend that if you're drawn to this thought system or any thought system where you forgive, you're more loving, you can feel more peaceful, you can look with the highest part of yourself. It's just something wonderful to practice and to aspire to, because we always want to help people, right, in the world. We always say, oh, we want to help, do the helping. When we help from the ego, it's for us. It's because we want something. We want to be important. We want to be the helper. When we're helping with the Holy Spirit and reflecting Jesus' thought system, that's good for the entire sonship, which includes you. You'll never know how good you can feel. Right, Bruce?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, because I think we're all kind of neophytes, really, in this curriculum. You know, Ken
right.
points out that Jesus calls us adults. He calls us infants. And so, you know, to give ourselves some slack and be patient with ourselves as we begin
right.
to question and learn to generalize and learn to see that everything in our mind that is motivated by a separate self-interest is not going to have a very good outcome.
Right.
And the opposite is also, you know, equally helpful, that anything is inspired by the shared interest that is born of total inclusion is going to lead us to a greater and greater sustainable peace. And I think that
yes.
sustainability is sometimes talked about in environmental circles, you know, that what's really sustainable. Well, what we can really sustain over time is the awareness of what we really are, because trying to live a lie in a game is not sustainable. you
right.
know, trying to assume a persona, you know, maybe it's the what do they call the characters in the games? The I forget there's the name there's a name that we ascribe necessarily to, you know, often to the game characters that is like a persona.
Right,
that,
like the pawns in the game. The pawns in the game.
Yeah, there's a word that's escaping at the moment. But you know, anything that's you know, imposed is like a costume or a mask or a facade is not going to really make us happy. And it's only when we unveil the reality, and that reality is something that's truly shared, then that's when it becomes easy, actually, and in addition to, you know, the simplicity that's already there.
Right.
We don't have to decide among a whole bunch of complicated choices. We just have to recognize that every decision is really about looking at how meaningless the ego's interpretation of things is, and conversely, how meaningful our inner kindness teacher's interpretation is, and beginning to start to see that consistently choosing that latter translation is what's helpful and what leads to a consistent peace of mind.
Oh, well said.
To read some more of Ken's comments, I think there's a lot of great stuff there.
Yes, go ahead, Bruce.
Okay. So, again, we're on the bottom page 15 of Journey Through the Workbook here. The workbook lesson itself says, that is the purpose of the exercise, and then Ken's comments, to help have us realize that there are no differences. Again, that's not on the level of form, but on the level of the mind, in terms of going beyond the space-time illusion, if you will. And then it continues to say, the statement should merely be applied to anything you see. As you practice the idea for the day, use it totally indiscriminately. And then Ken says, that is what generalizing means. Obviously, Jesus does not expect us to practice this exercise with total indiscriminateness. If we could, we would not need these lessons. The idea is to be aware of how we do not practice this in our lives, even when we are specifically trying to. And this brings up the whole arena of the topics of around resistance, which we've talked about at length.
Resistance.
It's an ongoing process, isn't it, to be gentle with ourselves when we see that resistance. So
yes.
Ken continues, says, when you do this lesson, therefore, you should actually think about whether you are truly ready to say that, quote, this hand is as meaningless as a pen, unquote. And if you believe that you think they are the same, take the pen and break it, and then take your hand and break it. Break that. He's not actually suggesting that.
Yeah.
You will suddenly realize that you believe there is a real difference. This is certainly not meant to make you feel guilty, but to help you realize your investment in identifying with the thought system of separation. So again, this is a non-trivial curriculum, but boy, that the outcome that we really are aiming for in the mind is profoundly transformative. It really is. Because,
that's right.
Because once we learn to apply it to everything, then we are freed from the world as we believe it to be. And I think that's a profoundly wonderful thing. But ironically, it frees us to be more effective in the world because we're not constrained by the ego's very narrowly focused dictates of what's acceptable or what's not acceptable behavior, in the sense that it's only acceptable behavior is what's in it for me. Whereas the Holy Spirit or inner kindness teacher's criteria is more along the lines of, well, what's kind to everyone? And we don't have to analyze that. We just have to follow that inspiration and trust that if we're guided by that general principle, we will apply that more and more and just happen to be in the right place and say the right thing and do the right thing that will be kind with that intention and with that guidance, that we all have, and we all have 24/7, 365, right?
Oh, gosh, that is a great note to end it on. I can't believe it's been 45 minutes, but Bruce, you're so right.
Wow.
Guys, don't think at all that this does not make your life better, quote, in the world, because ironically, even though the course isn't directed at that, your experience here will be so much better, and the transformations are profound, just like you said, Bruce. But we have to stop for today, but we will definitely continue on along these themes when Bruce comes back with us. And just as a reminder, all our friends listening out there, we love you. We're all in this together, and I want you to remember to be kind and gentle and easy on yourselves. And the minute you start to get hard on yourself, just smile and say, "Up, I must have chosen fear instead of love today." That's it, just as nonchalantly as that. So, Bruce, thank you so very much. I look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Thank you, Jackie.